Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Have you been seriously injured? Mama Justice is here for you. Our medical team partners with top-notch doctors, surgeons, therapists, and urologists, ensuring a comprehensive recovery journey. If you've been injured, call Mama Justice today. We're here for you.
What's up? Welcome in on this Sunday edition. We turn the music down here and we can get started. Sunday edition of the podcast. My name is Michael Borky. Glad that you guys are with me on this Sunday night. It has been hot, hot, hot around here. My goodness, it has been brutal. YouTube got three ads here. Let me go ahead and go in and just turn that off altogether. How about that? Let me just get rid of them. You have already suffered, unfortunately, through that, but I'm going to go ahead and do that. No, we should be all good microphone wise as well. Check, 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 check. Am I there? Are we good? Let me know. Off to a roaring start. We are back from SEC Media Days and apparently nothing is working, the right way. I'll check on that as well, but let me go ahead and fix the ad situation for you because that is just unacceptable. Let me turn them off. Done. All right. So unfortunately, you had to deal with that, but nobody else, at least as we're live, will have to. Welcome in as we get ready for football season. SEC Media Days is in the books. We are done with Tampa. It was a good week. It was a long week. I mean, we left Sunday morning, didn't get back until Friday afternoon, had a lot of really good interviews, a lot of really good conversation, got to sit down with all three Ole Miss football players that went. As I told you guys, the Trinidad interview in particular was special. I mean, he was good everywhere, though. The word I'm going to keep using to describe him, and I think it's the best description of his quote-unquote performance at SEC Media Days, was present. There are a lot of players there that, you know, they're smart. They're all, you know, young, athletic, confident guys, right? That's why you bring certain people there. But some of them don't really listen to the questions that they're asked and are kind of just, you know, they're focused on something else. And, you know, they're 18 to 22-year-old men. I get it. Their focus is probably on literally anything else besides these middle-aged dudes like me. Although, am I middle-aged yet? I don't know. I'm still only 34. But, you know, I understand why most of them don't particularly care about everything that we're asking of them. But everywhere, everybody got the same feeling when talking to Trinidad Chambliss. And it was that he was present. Not only did he listen to every second of every question that he got, but his answers were thoughtful and they were detailed. And for a college football player, I know he's on the older side of him. I mean, what a great ambassador that you have for your program. And a guy like Trinidad Chambliss, just smart and really impressive there. I don't know if you guys noticed it on the Kiwan interview. One of my questions, I framed it as, you know, you had a lot of noise at the end of last season. And I said, you know, everybody knew where Kiwan Lacy was going to go, right? Everybody knew. And he kind of smiled. He's like, yeah, I know what you're talking about. That kind of cracked me up. That was my favorite part about the whole week, really, was kind of, you know, bringing that up and seeing what his reaction would be. And he kind of smirked like, yeah, you know, a lot of people did talk about me and look where I am, you know. So I liked that. I love talking to Eccles about his horses. That was fun. Dude that size getting on the back of a horse in his free time is pretty awesome. So it was a good week, and Ole Miss did well. It's really hard to do poorly in that setting, to be honest. Most everybody did well. But I thought that in terms of attention onto your program, how your head coach performed, quote unquote, performed on the big stage. And that went really well. And he gained a lot of, quote unquote, fans through how he interacted with the media on that stage and in the breakout rooms and everything. He won over a lot of people. I think Trinidad won over a lot of people. Kiwon Lacy's just cool. And Will Echols, man, my favorite story of the week was thinking about his, you know, he's in great shape, but forgive my language, his big ass getting on the back of horses just cracks me up. So good week. I hope you guys enjoyed the radio show. I know Haydad and I had a lot of fun putting those together every single day, and a lot of clips out there and stuff, and just really good week. And we're going to talk about it, though. Ole Miss got a lot of respect. As you guys know, every media member at SEC Media Days gets a ballot. The all preseason all-SEC teams, they asked you to put 12 offensive linemen on there. I mean, I don't know what I'm looking at when I do that. I tried my best, okay? I have no idea what I'm really looking at. But the all-SEC teams are out, and the predicted order of finish is out as well. And I was pleasantly surprised, to be honest with you. Ole Miss got a lot of respect from the media there at SEC Media Days. And I think there's a few reasons for that. And we'll go through those tonight. And then we'll read your comments. And then we'll get out of here on this super hot Sunday edition. It is now officially July, right? Of the Rebel Report. Again, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Search Rebel Report. Subscribe, leave a comment, leave a rating, leave a review, all of those things. I would really appreciate you doing that. This edition of the podcast is brought to you by Scruggs in Saltillo, Mississippi. They've got 0% on your John Deere. It's America's tractor. They're zero-turn mowers, 0%. 5-series tractors, 0%. Compact tractors, 0%. Commercial mowers, you guessed it, 0%. Gators, just 1.9% for a Gator for 36 months. They all vary different months, but 0% financing at Scruggs, and they've got anything that you need for inside of your home, around your garden, your lawn, your hunting property, the deer camp, your lake, whatever it is. If you need it, they've got it at Scruggs, and tell them that it was me that sent you there. Okay, all SEC teams are out. We'll go through those quickly. First team quarterback was Trinidad Chambliss. That is my vote. I voted for Trinidad first team. I voted exactly how it worked out. I went Trinidad Manning Stockton, although I'm a big Gunnar Stockton fan, and I almost put him second team. I think he's a dog, and I think people are really overlooking Gunnar Stockton in Georgia this season. Don't sleep on the dogs, and I think they've got one at quarterback, but that's how I did it. Kiwon Lacy, first-team All-SEC running back alongside Ahmad Hardy, and it was really cool to hear Eli Drinkwitz say that Hardy is cleared to start working on football. So he's, you know, not cleared to full-speed practice right now, but he is cleared to start working on football again, which was really good to hear from him at SEC Media Days. That is it for the first-team offense for Ole Miss. First-team defense, Will Echols was the first-team defensive tackle. Alongside Colin Simmons, Dylan Stewart, and Prince Will Umanmielen. Cam Franklin made third-team defensive line. I actually had Cam Franklin on my second team for what it's worth, but I did have Echols first team. I had Franklin on my second team. Linebacker Whit Weeks, Xavier Adkins, and Rasheem Biles got first team. That does mean that Centarian Perkins did not make first team All-SEC. He did make second. I had him on my first team ballot, but it's totally fine. If you look at those guys, it is absolutely totally fine that Centarian Perkins made second team. I do think by season's end, Ole Miss will have more than one linebacker on these teams here. I missed offense. What am I thinking? I skipped Patrick Kudus. He was third team guard / tackle, All-SEC. I actually had Bryson Sanders on my center. He did not make it, but I did put him as my third team center because I do think that a guy that like him deserved that kind of recognition. So I did put him there. He did not make it for what that is worth to you. Patrick Kudus maybe sliding out to play some tackle this year. We'll see. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but it's possible. And then specialist Lucas Carneiro was second team place kicker behind Sandell, who won the, was it the Groza Award last year, the best kicker in the country. So I understand that. He was also second team kickoff specialist behind the same guy there. So those are the all SEC teams. Again, I do think that there is an opportunity for somebody like a Deuce Alexander to make this list, maybe a Jonte Cook to make this list. One of the two linebackers, that somebody in that secondary has a chance as well. So we'll see. But I'm not, you know, overly concerned about that when you consider how hard it is. The preseason all SEC polls are so hard to vote in because of a position like center. I mean, truly, like I watch more football than anybody I know. I consume more football content than anybody I know. I don't know what the hell I'm looking at when it comes to which center is better than the other. And oh, by the way, you have to pick three of them. And it's just, you know, I don't put too much stock into the all SEC teams because I know it's people like me that are voting in these things. And we really don't know at times what we're watching when it comes to some of this stuff. So I put that aside. The more important thing and the more noteworthy thing, I think, is Ole Miss being picked to finish third in the SEC. Georgia won with 2,519 points. This is how close everybody is, by the way, in the SEC voting-wise. Georgia 25-19, Texas 24-49, Ole Miss 20-04, so 2004. And then right behind them is A&M at 1967. So you see how close the voting is. So Ole Miss 4, 3, A&M 4, LSU 5, Alabama 6, Oklahoma 7. All of them are within about 600 points of each other. Then you have a big drop-off from Oklahoma to Tennessee. But Ole Miss picked to finish third in the SEC. And that, to me, is the more noteworthy thing out of the preseason poll and the voting from the media at SEC Media Days, voting Ole Miss third. It tells you a couple of things. One, that there is deserved belief in the roster. It's pretty obvious that when you've got a quarterback with the ability of Trinidad Chambliss, it just simply elevates a football team in ways that very few other positions can even come close to approaching the impact that a quarterback like that can have on the ceiling of a football team. So they've got him, they've got Lacy. They should be really good up front on defense. There's a lot of belief in that roster. But more importantly, I think a third-place selection from the media, because there should be a lot of belief in A&M's roster. There should be a lot of belief. I know you guys will roll your eyes at this one, but in LSU's roster, there should be a lot of belief in Alabama's and in Oklahoma's. I mean, these are all talented football teams. Ole Miss was given the nod at third, I think because there was a lot of respect and appreciation given to what Pete Golding did after he had to take over at the end of last season. Because, look, I think it's fair to have the offseason question of, you know, hey, I don't know what Ole Miss is going to be because I haven't seen Pete Golding run a program full time before. That's a fair question to have. It's a fair, not concern, but worry and kind of have a wait and see approach. It's totally within bounds, but you cannot, I don't think it's a fair categorization to say that you know nothing about what kind of coach he's going to be. We know something. And from talking to local guys and national guys all week, whether it be on air or off air, it's abundantly clear that a lot of people that cover the SEC are actually really well aware of, forgive my language, everybody, for the second time, the shitstorm that Pete Golding and Trinidad and those guys had to deal with during the playoff run last season. A lot of people are pretty keenly aware of how crazy that was. I was actually impressed, to be honest with you, with how well informed a lot of the people there were about what they actually had to deal with. And so navigating through all that and coaching great football and having a team prepared to play and focused, navigating all that, Pete Golding earned a lot of respect from the media. And I think it's deserved because while we don't know what it's going to be like when the program is totally, totally, totally his, but we do know what his on-field coaching can be like. We know that he can handle things like simple things like timeout management and stuff like that. We know that he can get a team focused and prepared through adversity. We know that he can build rosters. We know all these things. We got to sit there and witness it, that he had a team focused and prepared despite the type of stuff that no other team in my lifetime has had to deal with in college football, and get them ready to play and play well and have a ball in the air into the end zone to go to the national championship game. That stuck with people. And I think it should have stuck with people. And I think even though it's not a 100% guarantee, but I think that what you witnessed is a really good sign. It's a really good indicator that they're about to have and continue to have a really quality program. Because if you can handle that, then my God, what can't you handle as a head coach? So it's still wait and see, of course, but I think a lot of respect needed to be given to what Pete Golding dealt with. And I was, again, like I said a second ago, I was surprised at how well-informed people were about what they all had to deal with. And therefore, Ole Miss getting picked to finish third in the SEC is a nod to that. It's a nod to the roster. It's a nod to Pete Golding. And I think it's deserved. Now, though, what this also does is it creates a level of expectation. As I've been saying before, this is a no-excuses roster for Ole Miss. It's a no-excuses roster. This is a team good enough to win. This is a team good enough that, barring crazy injury luck, they should be playing the Egg Bowl with playoff implications. If they're not, something went terribly wrong. So this does enhance the pressure a little bit. There is no, well, it's year one excuses. No, it's time to win. A lot of people think that they can. They certainly think that they can. And I will tell you, I don't know if you guys noticed as well in the conversation with Trinidad, he's still, I mean, they're using the Miami game as motivation. He doesn't think that they, offensively, they played their best that night. It was almost, I mean, you could tell there's a chip on his shoulder about how that game ended. With the way they played offensively. So I don't know if you guys picked up on that or not, but it's all right there in front of them. We'll see if they can go take it. Practice starts in, hold on. Let me count the days. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 days, I believe, is when practice begins. So really good stuff. We'll read your comments after I tell you about Logan Smith, Shelter Insurance, 601-823-3500. Auto, home, life, or insurance for your business. 601-823-3500. Anywhere in Mississippi, call Logan Smith. What's 5 minutes going to hurt? You get a quote, you'll get a great rate, no doubt. Tell them I sent you. Logan Smith, Shelter Insurance. Again, 601-823-3500. Auto, home, life, or insurance for your business. Also, Advantage Business Systems, absms.com for all of your Mississippi office technology needs. And Priority One Bank. Switch and bank with me. They got 16 locations here in Mississippi, so there's likely to be one near you. Local loan servicing and decision making, a great online banking platform. Bank with me at Priority One Bank. All right, let's see. Pretty surprised Ole Miss was voted third. Thought they'd be sixth or seventh. Hey-o. I think anything south of six would be trying too hard. So I'm glad I didn't see much of that. Ole Miss actually got six champion votes. One of them was not me, so I don't. I did not. Hand up. I did not pick Ole Miss to win the SEC. I went with Georgia. I know. I know. My bad on that. I did go with Georgia though to win the SEC. But anyway. You did a good job of talking about what we wanted to hear without it being so blunt or uncomfortable. I tried to do that with Sankey. I think I told you guys this. I may not have, but I had 10 more questions/prompts that I wanted to get to with him that I didn't have time to get to. I actually ran over the time that that his publicist told me that I had. I carried him along. She's probably not happy with me because I threw them off schedule, to be honest with you, because I held him over. And I'm only like 3 minutes, but I did hold him over because she was giving me the wrap up. And I was like, okay. And then I asked him two more questions. I feel bad about that. But also, I wanted to ask him, and I was thinking about it going in. It's like, I need to ask because our audience, you know, we have a 12 radio station audience plus a podcast feed that is really well listened to and also a TV feed that is well watched. Like we have been blessed with a big audience. Shout out Super Talk and the platform that they provide. So our audience wanted to know, okay, or what do you think about Kiffin's off-season commentary? They want to know that, and I think they deserve to know that. What are you doing with Dabo Swinney? Those kind of things. But you can't ask that where he, like, I come off as like an angry fan. Like, you've got to ask those questions because that's what fans want to hear, but you don't want to be unprofessional to the point where he won't give you another one. So it's a hard, balance to strike there. But I hope it came off well. I know the people in upstate South Carolina were furious about his answer at Clemson, but I took away from that answer that here's the thing about Greg Sankey, guys. You can love him or you can hate him, but he does not speak without having thought about it ahead of time. Like, you don't get him off the cuff. I promise you he was prepared to talk about Dabo and Clemson, like, without a doubt. And a guy like him, again, you can hate what he has to say or love it. It doesn't matter. He does not speak in without having direct knowledge of what he's talking about. Again, even if you disagree with it, doesn't matter. When he responds to the question about Dabo's comments on Lane Kiffin, and his answer is what it was, I think that means something. And I think you should read into that. He didn't tell me to read into that. I think you should, though, because he doesn't answer questions in a hypothetical world without qualifying that as much. He was very direct. And I think if you are an Ole Miss fan listening to this, which the overwhelming majority of you are, obviously, I think that you should be encouraged by the way he answered the Dabo question. I think you've got somebody on your side of this thing, and that hasn't been always. He could have very easily given a stock answer of, you know, we encourage all of our members to, you know, follow the NCAA rules, and I'm not going to comment beyond that. You didn't get that. And he knew he was statewide in Mississippi when he said that, and he knew, because he's a smart guy, that those interviews get clipped and they get sent everywhere. He knew that. And I think when you've seen, like, the Bediako situation where he wrote against Alabama in that, or in the Chambliss case, he didn't weigh in at all, or the Aguilar case, he didn't weigh in at all. And, you know, he's kind of picking and choosing where he inserts himself. That struck me anyway, as you've got somebody on your side of this deal, for whatever that's worth. And then the question about Kiffin and LSU, you can tell he was, again, I don't want to put words in his mouth. I think you guys picked up on it. There was a little annoyance and some of the things that have been said this offseason. And I have a feeling he was pretty glad about there being no real jabs thrown on Thursday, and they'll be better prepared to make sure that the game goes off without a hitch than they were in 2021 when Lane went to Knoxville. Your talk with Neil McCready was great too. I really enjoyed it. I got to talk to Neil more this past week than really I ever have before, like, you know, interview and not. I mean, I told him I've been listening to that podcast since I was in journalism school. It's crazy. I would listen to them, like, right after they would publish. And then in the afternoon, if I was driving, I'd be listening to Matt and Richard on Head to Head. And so now, I'm, you know, I'm a guest on that podcast feed and I'm sitting in Richard's chair. It's life, man. Life's crazy sometimes. But no, it was really good. I really like the work that they do. So thoughts on the old SEC team. Kelly Jones was the obvious omission. I mean, Kelly Jones, look, I know you guys don't like Mississippi State. I know. Kelly Jones not making first team all SEC was simply this. It was a product of the helmet. That was it. I mean, it's exclusively a product of the helmet. He actually gave a really funny quote to us when he sat down with Hey Dad on Thursday, where during the Ole Miss game, he didn't say which player, but I don't know if you guys noticed, Ole Miss did not throw in Kelly Jones's direction literally the entire game. They did not target whoever was on Kelly Jones. It didn't happen. They just picked on all the other guys and had a huge day, because what's the point of even testing Kelly Jones when you can go pick on the other guys, right? Ole Miss had two current NFL wide receivers, and if Kelly Jones was guarding one, they didn't even test him. He's an elite defensive back, and he's huge too, long and tall. But he said during the game, he didn't say which receiver, but he said during the game, one of Ole Miss's players said, "Hey, bro, if you're guarding me, I'm not getting the ball." So, like, don't even – like, that is what we have been told. If you're guarding me, I'm not getting the ball, so don't worry about it. During the game, they had that conversation, which cracks me up. But, yeah, that was just – that was stupid. He should have been first team. I voted him first team. Hand up. I know. I voted a Mississippi State guy, but I also think that I'm fair. I would like to think that I'm fair, and he certainly belonged, and he got my vote, and that's helmet bias is what that is. I'm sure Pete's glad it's over, but I believe it was an intro into the rest of – the SEC media. They really didn't understand him until now. I agree completely because, you know, as a defensive coordinator, under Saban, not allowed to talk, under Kiffin, was only allowed to talk once a year locally. That was it. So nobody really knew him, you know? And then during the college football playoff run, all the focus was on not him. You know what I mean? So people really didn't get to appreciate him in that setting until this past Wednesday. And he nailed it. He nailed it. And people are going to start, reporters and journalists in these TV, you know, SEC Nation, all that stuff that they do, are going to start seeking him out, because he's not just a goofball, right? There's thoughtfulness. You learn things about football when he is asked about football. He gives long, detailed, quality answers. And does that mean they're going to win? I don't know. I don't think so. But I do really appreciate that in that setting, he is unfiltered. He'll tell you what he thinks. And when he's asked about football, you come away from his answers learning something about football. And I really like that. Like, it's really easy to consume. And I mean, there are some coaches, I'm not even just talking about Lane, although, you know, his press conferences were mostly dreadful from a day to day. But there's a lot of coaches that are like that. I think we talked the other day and I mentioned Kenny Dillingham as another coach that Pete kind of reminds me of when you are done listening to the press conference, you feel like you learned something. I learn things when I listen to Pete Golding press conferences. So, yeah, and a lot of people did too. Kiffin's filibustering was a good move, avoided as much as he could, but I was entertained by Michael Bratton's question. Kiffin, of course, dodged the answer. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, kudos to SEC Mike for – you know, saying, "Hey, you know, you talk about, you said what you said, but you got great players to go there. How do you marry those two things?" And, you know, talked about we're all going to die in Hulk Hogan as a response. But I said this on the radio show. I did think I said this here. Unless something new happens, you got great answers from Golding on that stage and in that setting. The team is ready to look through the windshield. The coach is ready. The AD's ready. And they're all operating still as if they are a program with big time expectations. I think that it's time now, because Lane did his rounds and he filibustered and he apologized. There's a couple eye roll things in there, but you know, he apologized, said he wanted to move on, didn't take any real shots. He did the just different thing, but he didn't take any shots. Unless something new comes up, if you are asking me, and I think I've already said this to you guys, so forgive me for being repetitive, but I think this is an important thing, because right now, Ole Miss is on the cusp of proving that it's more than just one coach. Like, you can do that. You look at, this isn't the best example, but like James Franklin left Vanderbilt and went right back into the tank. I think that there is more to Ole Miss than just what Lane Kiffin was able to do. I think that you can have long-term, sustained, great success as a program. I think you've got a lot of things working for you. A highly dedicated, motivated fan base that has money. You live in a state that produces talent. You live in an attractive town that, despite what it was said in Vanity Fair, that people are feel warm in, and like you can sell that. There's a lot going for it, and you can be one of those programs in the SEC. You can be in that mix with the Tennessees and the Alabamas and the Oklahomas of the world, and you can be looked at that way. You are this close to getting there, and you've got everything working for you still. The AD's still there. The collective people and all that is still there, and the motivation is still there, and all of you are pulling the rope in the exact same freaking direction right now, and it's a really cool thing to witness, because I haven't lived in Mississippi that long. Most of you guys have lived here a lot longer, and you have seen years where nothing was right. Coach wasn't right, AD wasn't right, university leadership wasn't right. And now you've got all that. And so what I would encourage now moving forward is to literally only look forward. And when game week comes in week three, you have fun and you make your game day signs and you chant what you chant at Nick Saban because he's earned it and the game day set has earned it. You know, CAA, you know, do all that stuff. Sure. But anything that is about Lane Kiffin anymore, I would stop. I would cancel it. I would stop. I would not do that anymore. Unless something new comes up, I wouldn't even talk about him anymore. You've got Louisville in week one. That's a quality opponent, a really good team. Frankly, a stadium that's not anywhere close to being sold out yet on both sides, by the way. There are more important things than Lane Kiffin if you want to continue to build and become a big-time program. So continuing to make stuff about him, in my view, is small time. Until it's game week when it's time to play. That's just me. But like, I wouldn't do food items anymore. I wouldn't do the roast thing. I would cancel all that and just... I would be about more than that. I know those are small things, but, and I've probably already talked to you about that before. Sorry for being repetitive. I can't remember what I say on the radio show and what I say on here. I can't remember. Principal's not a first team guy. He's got a first team guy ceiling. It's not at his ceiling yet. Does anyone believe the Kiffin I got off Twitter story because Knox challenged me to? Nope. Don't believe that at all. If you can take one player from the first team all SEC and place him in Ole Miss's roster, who would it be? Offensive, yeah, tackles your free space. So just, yeah, let's not even go there, because the obvious is one of the first team tackles. Let's see. Who would I add if I could add somebody? Colin Simmons. I mean, I know Ole Miss has quality defensive line, but you can't have too many. Isn't this third straight year of Georgia and Texas being picked for the SEC title by the media? I don't know that answer, honestly. based on what more we've learned about the playoff and nine-game schedules, over under 3.5 SEC teams make the playoff. Under. Under. We've talked about that a whole lot, but Greg Sankey giving a quote on the stage at SEC Media Days admitting that they had unsatisfactory conversations with representatives of the College Football Playoff Committee back during spring meetings tells you all you need to know. And I asked Rich Clark, the executive director of the College Football Playoff, on the radio show about that very thing, and he confirmed it. He was like, yeah, we presented what we think is a fair way to evaluate the schedules, and they didn't like it. Eight more losses, and you're having unsatisfactory conversations with the playoff committee. Tells me all I need to know. It is wait and see, but if Pete was the same head coach as Zach Arnett, I don't think even the Tulane game would have been a breeze. Forget beating Georgia 100%. Trinidad has a point. They basically played three quarters of offense against Miami. The first quarter was essentially nothing. Absolutely. Sup, Borky? How are you, man? Good to see you. First time since me and the wife got married. Congratulations! Wait, why wasn't I there? What the hell? I'm kidding. How's this for a playoff prediction? Ohio State, Georgia, Oregon, Miami, Texas, Notre Dame, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Indiana, LSU, Memphis. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 SEC teams. I would take the under there, I think. Who would I add that's not on there? I think I would take off Texas Tech. I know that's crazy. I would add possibly one more from the Big Ten. Because you already have Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana on there. I think USC has a chance to make that. I know. It's crazy talk, but the Big 12 very well could get two. Look out for BYU to make the playoff this year. I like your Memphis pick. Kind of have 10-2 pegged for the team. Somehow they scrap to 8-2 after Oklahoma, and they're going into that final home game against State with playoffs on the line again. That'd be huge. How much of Pete's comments on not being prepared in 2024 do you think could be the difference between actually being more prepared each game versus just taking a light shot? I think it's both. I mean, look, you can say he's taking a shot all you want, and if you want to take it that, not you, of course, but if you want to take that as taking a shot, then I think you're really missing that he was just simply telling the truth. They were not prepared to play against Kentucky in 2024 at the very top of the program, regardless of what the reason is or what you think he's implying. They weren't prepared to play. That was a team that was not focused on the right stuff, and that got them beat by Kentucky, that got them beat in Baton Rouge, and that certainly got them beat in Gainesville with all that weird garbage they were doing with Micah Davis. I mean, that was a team that should They should have gone undefeated. They were good enough to win every single game they played all season long. That was the best defense in the country, and they were dominant. And I mean dominant. But because of lack of focus, whether it was, I mean, again, there was a lot of things going on. There was the Bentley thing, the running back room weird deal going on. It was that they had like this hyper focus on Bill, like on Trey Harris specifically for some reason. And they like built the offense around one receiver. And when he got a little banged up, and Jackson Dart wasn't particularly good either that year. I saw a tweet, I think it was just some burner account, but they were exactly right. That 2024 team with Matt Corral does not go 9-3. I know Dart ended up being the first round pick, and he might have a long career in the NFL, and he looked good as a rookie, but there was a lot wrong with that team. I mean, it started with the Judkins drama, but it just it turned into more running back drama. It turned into all kinds of stuff. They weren't prepared to play. They were way too good to be what they were. He's not taking a shot. He's telling the truth. And everybody that was around the program knows that. And so if somebody on the outside looking in wants to lose their mind over a comment like that, then so be it. You know, that's not worth your time, because the truth is that team could have won a national championship. and it went 9-3 because at the very top of the program, they weren't prepared. That's just the truth. And he didn't even say that. He said they were distracted. They were, in a lot of different ways. We'll say, with the exception of Wazoo last year, they did do a good job of being ready every game. Well, you say that, South Carolina and Florida, those were not quality performances by the offense. I think that there was some level of distraction there. Those teams were just so bad that it didn't matter. Think Ole Miss fans are in particular wanting to buy up tickets late in the game in Nashville? I know I am. Yeah, I mean, $80 to get in the door to sit on the last row of the stadium? Nah, that'll go down. Should I take Cam Coleman if I could have one first-team player? Could you imagine Trinidad, Cam, and Kiwon on offense? I would still take an offensive lineman. A1 coverage at media days. Thanks, man. We had a lot of fun. I mean, that 12 hours of radio is the best radio we do possibly every year. Favorite rivalry game besides the Egg Bowl? Oh, here's a cop-out answer. You ready? Cop-out answer. Army-Navy. There's your cop-out answer. What team currently in the top 10 would you predict to be outside the top 25 at season's end? Let me look at just any preseason top 25. This is from July 17th. Notre Dame, number 4, I could see them falling out. Texas, I could see. I mean, honestly, guys, I can make an argument for Notre Dame not finishing the top 10, for Texas not finishing in the top 10, for Indiana not finishing the top 10, for Ole Miss. You can make an argument. You can make an argument for Miami. I mean, my gosh, I mean, this is what I love about this era of college football, is the volatility. I mean, I could see LSU, certainly, according to this, as a top 10 team. I most definitely can see them falling out of that. So, I mean, there's just so much, volatility is the right word here. Louisville, by the way, ranked 21 in this ESPN. Way too early, top 25. The 24 team should have been the national runner-up to Ohio State. And with that defense, could have played with them. Pete said, from a talent perspective, this defense has the chance to be better than the 24 defense. Where do you think they will end the season in terms of points per game allowed? 24 fourth, 25 41st. Somewhere, I think, in the top 25. Somewhere in the top 25. The schedule's really difficult. Don't forget that. It's a lot more difficult than the 24 schedule. How many SEC teams do you think will be in the top 25 when it comes out? Okay. Texas, Georgia, Texas A&M. I think Ole Miss will get in there. Possibly LSU. I think LSU might, you're right, I think LSU might get in ahead of Ole Miss, but we'll see. We will see. All right, guys, I really appreciate you. We're back, regular schedule now. We are good to go, regular schedule, and I'll see you guys on Tuesday night. Camp starts a week from Thursday, I believe is how that will work out. A week from Thursday is when camp starts. Really appreciate you guys being here, as always. I will see you on Tuesday night. You guys have a good one. Thank you for being here.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.